It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.
Welcome back to the Millennial Mija podcast. I'm excited to be here right now, live from Boyle Heights on Ale's birthday. Say happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
How old are you today? 26. She's 26. Ooh. And we thank her for all the work she does with the podcast. And we love you, Ale. Happy birthday. And our special guest, Susie Plasencia.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me. I'm always happy to make it down to Boyle Heights. I'm already getting ready to eat after.
Yeah, and a perfect day, too. We actually have, there's actually a car show going on. Shout out to Edward and Figure It Out Agency out of Austin, who put this event together, I believe, for Go-Gurt. And shout out to me for helping them make that connection. So, period. Love you, Edward. Period. So this episode is going to be called Up in Smoke with Susie Plasencia, because Susie has a lot to tell us about the cannabis industry and being a Latina leader in the cannabis industry. But first, I don't know, in my research for you, I found out about the Chingona scandal. Mm. And what's interesting about that is that I got a box and they asked me to start promoting for them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, yeah, the guy comes and brings the box and it's a white guy. And I'm like, okay, maybe they just have a white PR agency, right? Like, yeah. Didn't really think anything of it. And then he's like, he gives me the box and he's like, oh, he asked me to do some like quotes for their page and just different stuff. And I was like, okay, cool. But yeah, I definitely want to meet the sisters first. Like, for sure, right? Yes. I said I definitely want to meet the sisters first because I would like to have them on my podcast. Like, I'm not going to start promoting something that didn't sit right from the beginning. That's the reason why I didn't post anything.
That's exactly what I did. Because I'm a contributor for Green Entrepreneur Mag, and when he came and met me to give me the shit, I was like, I want to meet the women because I want to feature them.
Don't get me wrong, I still kept the box.
No, me too. I wanted to learn more. You know.
Yeah, yeah. So long story short, tell them what the scandal was with. So there was a band. I'm all telling you to tell them, and then I tell them.
It's on the LA Times, so like, yes. It's great to be have
because you know, of you though, right?
Well, yeah, but also the writer, shout out to Dorney Pineda at the LA Times. She was very moved by what happened, and she saw what was going on, and she jumped in. You know, it was like Latinas. This whole situation was Latinas coming through and showing our power.
Yeah,
and so I love that the writer for the piece that was on the front page of the LA Times for Sunday paper, like the print.
Yeah,
what is a Latina?
You.
No, the Latina.
No, but you were on it, right?
Yeah, it was me. But like, and my, you know, my compañera Sabina Monet, shout out to her. But she was also featured, and it was just such a surreal moment. But I really think it was a moment for all Latinas. Like, it really was. It was just showing our power again. You know, like, we could do it.
I'm gonna give a little background on this. So there was a brand, a cannabis brand called Chingona, La Chingona Cannabis, right? And I mean, when I tell you, they had the branding of like Dia de los Muertos. They had, first of all, this is what I can't do. I just can't. The in-depth story that they had behind the brand on the website, like somebody wrote this. Somebody wrote a fictional bio for three sisters that are from Mexico that had this family farm for hundreds of years and all kinds of shit. So then I'm reading this and I'm like, hell yeah, I'll promote this brand. I want to meet the sisters. He's like, yeah, okay. And then when I asked again, when I met him in person and he brought me the stuff, he's like, yeah, that's a thing. It's, you know, they're kind of in transition right now. And I was like, well, what do you exactly mean by that?
Wow.
And then he told me, and I was like, wait. So what you're telling me is there's no sisters? And he's like, no, it's a man that owns it. And I'm like, okay, well, he's a Mexican man? Like, what? No. Girl, tell what you know, because
I'm like, my jaw's to the floor right now because of someone else having this situation. I am like so amazed right now. Like, I'm like taking it all in.
He sent me a screenshot of, you know, Belladonna, right?
Yeah.
So you know how they post like quotes and stuff? He literally sent me a screenshot of that and was like, can you do this for us? And I know them. I was like, no, I can't do that for them. And he offered me a number.
No, it's because this man, like, he refused to talk to the LA Times because he was like very, like, not wanting to.
obviously, that's right? Embarrassing.
But his whole strategy was seeing like Latinas have come up. Like, let's be honest. Like, yeah, over the past couple years.
No, it's our time.
You know, we've climbing at the same time. I think that he, as a marketer, saw our community and saw it as an outsider, like, oh, this is what they go for. I know how to reach them. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's what I think some marketers do. However, what I tried to tell him early on, I was like, I get it. Like, you're a marketer. Like, you're just thinking, you're seeing trends. You're seeing what's going to sell. I was like, you're stepping into community that you like, this is different, mm-hmm. you know? And when I first initially told him this, I had almost the exact experience. Like, he reached out to me. Because, but the thing is I only had like 700 followers at the time. Like, I was like just in the cannabis industry, but very getting started in terms of making a name for myself and like showing people what I'm about. But at that time, you know, I didn't have that many followers, and he had reached out and he's like, oh, let me give you gifts. Yeah. And I was already doing influencer marketing for a brand. And I was like, the reason you do that is because they have a lot of followers, mm-hmm. but I didn't have any. And so I realized at that point, it was because of what I look like.
Yeah.
And what he was looking for. And similar to the way he talked to you about the quotes, with me, it was he wanted content of me with the stuff. Uh-huh. And it was because we kind of look similar, all of us. Yeah. I think that he was looking for that look.
That look,
again, yeah. The marketing person on the outside just piecing it together. Mm-hmm. And so he's like, okay, I need that look. The quotes, this brand is doing yeah. well. Mm-hmm. So we need to be the cannabis version of that.
Exactly.
It was all that, you mm-hmm. know, I think that from my conversations from him early on, that what I got from it early on was that he's just doesn't see it any deeper.
Yeah.
He just sees it like, oh, I'm doing my job. I'm doing my, you know, this and that. And so after he gave me that baggie of stuff and and I was so excited to feature them. And I was like, I want to buy this in the shops. Like, I'm yeah. glad that you gave me these gifts. But I want to go and shop for this.
Like, no, I was reading the bio, stuff. I felt hella proud. I was like, this is...
Me too.
I would, yes, the answer is yes. Like, I'll do all of that stuff.
Wow. I'm down. I'm floored right now because that's what I tried to tell this man. I was like, if I did this... I was like, in terms of the way it made me feel, I was like, just think about what it's doing to other Latinas. Like, mm-hmm. we've been wanting to support Latinas in cannabis, and you gave us a Latino owned brand, like, and you're telling me it's not real.
I yeah. was like, yeah,
I don't think you know how harmful this is because you're not acting like it. You yeah. know, and I just honestly think that you may not know.
No,
I was giving the benefit of the doubt.
You took this to the level that I felt. I was like, they'll get their karma kind of thing. I was like, the answer for me is absolutely not, but I didn't take it any further than
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But you decided to, and I want to know more about that.
Yeah, because I mean, you and I had the almost exact experience at that point, except that, yeah, I think that ultimately at that point when he told me that the truth, that it was owned by five non-Latino men, it was like four white men and one black man. It was a MLB player who invested mm-hmm. in this brand. And so they were very, very forward about it. He had it on his Instagram account and everything. The football player. I mean, the MLB player and, yeah. and everything. And so it's just crazy to me that, like, no red flags to all the people involved. Like oh, there's a fake story? That's fine. Like, let's do it. I'm going to put yeah. that Instagram account on my yeah. Instagram account. Like, and, like, there's no red flags at all. And
then
so,
even plagiarizing your photographer, right? Somebody that
so
you knew.
Weird. Oh, yeah, we'll get to that. It was weird. But just sketchy stuff. But, like, so at that point, he gives me all the stuff. I ask. He tells me the truth. I was still absorbing it. And I think that for many Latinas and women of color that, like, go to college and then get a job, you end up kind of separating yourself from – like your culture a little bit, and you kind of start this like whitewashing a little bit. It just happens to you without even wanting to, but that's yeah. what the school system does mm-hmm. to you. That's what universities do to you.
Yeah.
Like, you end up kind of like doing that. So I have this ability to code switch, like many women of color.
Same, so girl.
So when I got this awful news, the Latina that lives inside always, the rage, obviously, what the fuck? Like, yeah. this is fucked up. Do you yeah. realize? But then the code switching happened where I'm like, interesting. Yeah. You know, wow.
Well, because there are two ways to fight battles, you know?
Like, and right now I was gathering information. And I had to suppress that, like, what the fuck in me. I had to suppress it for that moment because I wanted to learn. I wanted to understand this situation. What is going on? And so I wrote him an email that night. And I wrote it and, like, I just sat on it for a while, and I was like, my intent for this email was, as a fellow professional in marketing and in cannabis, I wanted him to just, like, I think that, because I recognize that he's just doing his job. He was very kind of like trend watching, doing the thing. But so I wanted to just send him a message saying, hey, I know that you're doing your thing. I was like, this is different. This is Latinas. And this is an industry that uses Latinas but doesn't recognize them. Mm-hmm. And you're giving them a Latina-owned brand. I was like, I don't think you know what you're stepping into. So just take a moment before you go out and look for girls that look like me just so you can get the content. I was like, this strategy, it worries me. Mm-hmm. Because if I did this, there are going to be other Latinas who may not be as not understanding, because I was not giving into the anger at that point because mm-hmm. of my training as a 10-year PR professional. Yeah. I was like,
my corporate training,
my code switching abilities. Like, another Latina might not have that, and that might end badly for everyone. Yeah. I was like, be careful, and just, that's all I have right now, honestly. Yeah. And so his response to me was, oh, you're looking for a job.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this was the person that, like, dropped off the box, or the owner of the company?
No. The guy, you met with him.
The one we're talking. Yeah,
that was him.
Same guy.
And I don't have to say his name. You can look at the LA Times, see his full government. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He did that when he was involved in the way that he was. So I don't have to say anything. But, like, he is who he is. You know who he is. And I was just like, hey, you know. And so he's like, oh, you're looking for a job. And I'm like, damn, like, no, like, I really am not, you know, and that's not what it is, you know. And so he was like, oh, well, you know, I'm happy to give you a job. Like, I'm happy to, you know, I want to give Latinas work, you know, I want to help.
That's what he was saying. That was his whole strategy because, to try and convince.
Yeah. So he was like, I want to empower, you know, I want to do this. And I was like, that's interesting. I was like, I just had a lot more questions. Like, we just have to meet and talk, you know. And so it kind of, my strategy always is leading with the truth. And transparency.
Period.
Like, there's no way. Like, no hay otra. Like, what are you trying to do? And I was like, if you know that this is fake, like, the only way to work with me is making it real. Like, you get yourself a Latino owner or Latina, would be great.
Uh-huh. Like, I also said to take down the story. Because I was like, that's too...
It was tough for me because inside I want to give him all this advice, but I'm like, it's not my place.
Yeah.
So it was rough for me. So what I did tell him, I was like, if you want access to me to work with you on how to repair this bullshit right here, you got to actually be real Latino owned, because I'm not going to be part of a team to help obscure this, to help obfuscate this, to help... Like, basically...
soften the blow because, we have a Latina on our staff, so...
I'm not going to be that. I'm not going to do that. It has to be actually owned significantly by someone of Latino culture to make this make sense for me so I could even be a part of this team. Mm-hmm. So I was like, you can go back to the drawing board with that one. Like, that's not going to work. So we kept continuing the conversation kind of like, I don't know. I'm keeping an ear to you, but I'm not accepting money. I'm not accepting anything until something changes. It's weird, you know? And I just kept, like, just in conversation, right? And they have a meeting with the guy who was featured on the LA Times, who did speak to them. He's the owner of everything. We all had a conversation, and he's like, oh, you know, I didn't know this was going to be a problem. Like, you know, it happens a lot in the liquor industry. It happens a lot in the beer industry. He's like, I just don't understand why, you know, it's a cartoon. The women's are cartoons. And... you know, people need to understand. Need to understand. And so I let him speak. And after he was done, I was like, okay, now I'm going to educate you.
Yeah.
And that was what my role was with that.
Ooh, I would have paid to be in that room.
Honestly, it tested me in a lot of ways. It tested my professionalism. It tested my ability to hold myself with these white men, being how nonchalantly... racist, nonchalantly misogynistic, and to them
dismissive.
Right, I'm outnumbered heavily, so I have to check my rage, check all of the feelings that I'm feeling for the greater good of being understood. And that is really hard for a lot of us women, is checking our emotions for the greater good of being understood, because it's you can, if you succumb to that, you give up your ability to be understood, because a lot of men, doesn't matter if they're white men, but most likely when they're white men, is they're gonna discount you because of your emotions. So mm-hmm. if you give in at all, like you've given your ability to be heard and understood. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough line to play with, because there are times where like I'm so emotional, where I'm feeling this way, but then I know like if I even flinch a little, they're gonna, oh, I can't listen to her, whatever yeah. she's saying, I'm muted because you, I gave into the emotions.
You basically validate their stereotype of you.
Yeah. So that was a hot seat. That was a hot seat. I'm outnumbered, and they're telling me things that are very nonchalant. They're from the business world that apparently I don't know of, because yeah. again, they think I'm in my 20s. Like, no, I'm in my yeah. 30s. I've been doing this for a decade. I went to a top university and I study this. And so I'm hearing all of them, and I'm keeping my mouth shut. I'm just listening to them tell you, don't know what you're doing. We know what we're doing. This is the way the beer companies do it. And you guys, all these people getting hurt, they don't know what we're doing. And so how do we fix this, Susie? I'm like,
wow.
So yeah, so it was weird. It tested me a lot, because I could have easily given into my emotions, but I had to, like I said, I had to keep it going for the greater good of being understood and understanding what this is, because I felt a bigger purpose. A Latina brand in cannabis.
Yeah.
You guys have a responsibility to do this right for us.
Yeah.
I felt a big responsibility, and that's why I kept listening to them. But I refused to work with them, and I did not accept money. Like, that just could not do that.
Yeah, same.
So basically, they circled back. I get a phone call by the guy that met with you. He goes, we have a proposition. We have like a proposal kind of thing. We want you to be part owner of the brand. And then you could be the Latino owner. Then boom, we fix the problem.
Wow.
They offer me such a small percentage, point percentage. Not even like a 1%, like a point percentage.
How and insulting.
To basically just fix everything.
Yeah.
To be the part owner that they wanted, to be able to peddle the story. And on top of that, tap me for my experience, because I have an agency, Night Shift, that specializes in social media marketing. We do storytelling. I specialize in everything that they needed.
Uh-huh.
But so it was a point percentage to do all the work, but also save them from that. And, you know, it came with the contract, but I'm like, I didn't say no right away. I said, let's talk, because this percentage tells me that we're not aligning on something, we're not understanding, and I need to know more about your business, because maybe I don't understand a point percentage enough, like, you know, because a lot of business and point percentages is like taxes, like who else is in the industry, who's else in this business. I was like, I just don't understand this number better. I need to understand that number better. I'm not even saying no at this point. I was like, we just need to talk and meet. And that's when this guy, the guy you met with, he tells me that I should be grateful
for
what I am getting, because, and then I shouldn't ask questions, that I'm not allowed to ask questions.
Girl.
Then who am I to ask questions, that I should be grateful to get this, that any Latina would be grateful to get this.
That is so fucking insulting.
Yeah. And again, this is another moment where I'm tested, because I'm a softie. I'm a chillona, like I'm the cry baby to the core, but I'm also educated, and I'm also have this rage in me that I can't give in to those emotions. But when he told me that, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, I wanted to like lose it at that point and like be like, here I go again, doesn't matter what school I went to, doesn't matter what scholarship I got.
Yeah,
to
because in his
I'm
eyes
still gonna be told that this is the best that I deserve.
You should be
and
grateful.
So I'm it was true for me, like, wow. I wanted to cry right then and there.
Yeah,
but I'm also angry, and I also want to give in to that Latina in me that's like, who the fuck do you think you are? All those angers.
Was it that made you decide to go to...
Well, not even at that point.
Really?
No, at that point, I was pushing for a meeting.
Uh-huh.
Because I wanted to, again, educate. But I also wanted to educate myself. Like, give me a window into this business on how you think this makes sense.
Uh-huh.
You know? Because I'm grateful that I have business knowledge, but I'm also grateful for my partner, my boyfriend, Bobby. Shout out to him.
Shout out, Bobby.
But he, MBA from USC as well, finance degree from Tulane. He understands numbers way more than anybody I've ever met. He's a freaking genius. And when he read that number, he started laughing out loud. And he was just like, like, what? It's like, he was more pissed than I was, because I was still understanding when I saw his, how angry he was, it put in perspective, like, wait, and I was like, wait, what? Let me have a meeting with them. Let me just have a meeting. I didn't even say no at that point. I wasn't even angry. I was just like, boom, 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 I have a meeting. And that's when he told me, that I was not going to be a discussion, that this was the offer and I could take it or leave it, and that this, and that. And I'm like, that's when I told him the quote that the end of the LA Times article ended the article with. And I was like, you know.
Which was what?
Something to the effect of, like, you guys are building a brand of La Chingona. I don't think you've ever met one.
Yeah.
Like, straight up. Like, I don't think, but this is what a Chingona is. Like, yeah. This is what you is. And I'm going to say no to that. Because this literally is what a Chingona is. Now you know, like, kind of thing. Because this is not going to fly. And so we hung up the phone. And this was July 2nd, 2020. It's coming up. Yeah. The 2-year anniversary for La Chingona. It's to be emotional. but no, and I told him, I was like, I don't think you've ever met one. And we ended it like that. And I said, you talk to Mike and you let him know, like, meeting, I'm not saying no, but let's have a conversation. I wasn't asking for nothing. I was like, let's have a conversation so that we can get on the same page. We ended the call. And week passes, I follow up, no response. I'm like, okay. And then I get a response from him saying, yeah, let's get a phone call. I'd like you to meet Leticia. She's the owner of La Chingona.
Wow. So he...
Who the fuck is Leticia?
Oh, my God. Okay. You know what?
Who the fuck is Leticia?
Wow, somebody he randomly found on the street to put her name on some documents, and just, I remember, and I think I seen them post something about it, or maybe I heard it from him, or I don't remember, but I also remember this moment of being like, wait, now there is? Yeah.
At that moment is when I was like, I don't know what is even going on. I was just like, what? And that's when I had hit up my girl, Sabina. Sabina Monet, she's an amazing Chicana artist. She lives up in the Oregon area, but she is an activist. And I had been inspired by her for a long time. I wasn't close to her like that, like friends, but I had worked with her on a project. And I just thought she was the coolest bitch. And I just thought she was so cool. And we were, like, very aligned. And I was like, you know what? Let me just get on a call with her. And I'm just going to... let her know how I'm feeling right now, because I don't think anyone's going to understand it like her, because she has done activism work and she's put herself out there and done shit. So I'm not talking with her and I'm letting her know, and she's pissed and she's like, oh my God. And then on the phone with her, and she starts doing research. Mm-hmm. She's like, I want to find out who this girl Leticia is. We can't find anything on her. And we're like, who is she?
Oh my God.
Who is she? Is she real? Like,
hell no, she wasn't real.
What's going on? We still don't know to this day who she is.
Here, what it all comes down to is they tried it, and
they picked the wrong bitch. Because the thing is that I'm a journalist through and through. I don't just take what people say. I verify. Mm-hmm. And that, shout out to USC Journalism School. Mm-hmm. We have to verify even if it's true, because the story has to make sense. Yeah,
trust and verify.
And verify through and through. So they picked the wrong one, too, because I care about my Latina community. They picked the wrong one, too, because I'm a Latina in the cannabis industry. I was already feeling not recognized, tossed to the side, mm-hmm. feeling this way. So they picked the wrong one because you fooled me.
Yeah.
You fooled me because I wanted this. I wanted to support Latina mm-hmm. brand.
And so now you've become one.
That honestly was in the stars. What's meant for you, you can't fuck up. And I think that this situation, it tested my integrity. It tested money being dangled. Same. And I said no. It tested a lot. It tested my writing ability mm-hmm. because the boycott happened this way. So I talked to Sabina and she goes, she's pissed. She starts doing research because she's more savvy with the research than maybe I thought I was. This girl's going in deep and she's looking up the licensures
of business.
La Chingona, where it's going. We found out that, you know, they had an office like a facility that was across the street from the detention centers. It was just really weird in Adelanto. And she's finding out some stuff. And then I'm like, fuck, I'll join you. So we both start like looking up and we uncover just sketchiness through and through, like to the core sketchiness, right? And then we get on the phone call, and then they go, oh, yeah, you know, they had offered me this 5%. So we figured out at that point, she through her research, that the percentage, the little tiny, tiny ass percentage that they had given me was for a brand that they created, like, just a month before or, like, a week before.
God, they were just trying to continue to scam.
Yeah, so what they wanted to do is they wanted to give me a percentage of a company that they had just created that was worth zero.
A dummy brand.
So that I wouldn't get any percentage of the real cannabis company. And but I would be building the cannabis company. So it was so dark. At that point, when it was like I had given so much to educate, to level down with them, to get them to understand that what they were doing, you know, was deeper than what I thought.
It was wrong.
And then for that to have happened, that they were honestly going to do this, that they were going to swindle me to put me into contract of a fake company. I was like, at that point, like, it's over. Like, they need to go away. Let the community do what they are going to do, but stop trying to benefit from them. Stop trying to steal from them, because I've considered stealing in so many different ways. My emotions, I felt, were stolen for a moment and betrayed. Like, stop doing this. This is too much. So I expressed to her what I wanted to do. I was like, can we do a boycott? I was like, what does this look like? And we're like, oh my God, if we're going to do something like this, it's got to be done right, because I don't play. I don't want to confuse our people. I don't want to be that loud Latina that they're expecting me to be. So we planned it out. I planned it out the way I know how to do, the way I was taught how to do in school. We did a PR campaign. So it was artful as well. It was artistic, because Savina is an artist. She's an activism artist. So I did the writing, she did the art, and we did a post. It was a post that was like swipe 3. What it is, what to do about it. We had a Google link.
So how long from the time you created this campaign, where did they shut down?
It was like days. Days.
That's what we want to hear.
Days.
That's what we want to hear. They, you know, it's people underestimate women, especially women, women in business, and especially women in corporate environments.
That were trying to
play their game their way, and they underestimated the fuck out of you. And now you are owner of your own brand, right?
Yes, I'm part owner, so I have compañeros as well. So it's not like it's all me, you know. I don't want to front like, oh, Latina own all me. I have partners, but I am empowered as a part owner, you know. And so we got our Latina brand, you know. Like, let's do it, you know.
So you see, you found a way for us to come out on top of this. Well, and that's, you know, what really matters.
What I wanted people to know is I wanted this to be a learning lesson. That's why I went through with the boycott. Yes, it's to show the cannabis industry to respect Latino culture, respect Latinas, but it was to show everybody, every marketer in cannabis, lead with truth, lead with authenticity. Don't touch cultures without respect and without permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, what's going on? And I think that people have understood that, because there is a fear that is in the cannabis industry. And I hope that and I hope that it comes with just fear in terms of making them second guess.
Yeah.
Just double check. Mm-hmm. Do it right. Do it with respect always. And I'm grateful that, you know, that's the lesson that we can give. Also, just Latinas, like, when we decided to do the boycott, it was a little bit of confusion at first. Like, what's going on? Like, this girl, Susie, I only had, like I said, under 1,000 followers at that point. So it was like, who's this girl? Like, she's doing this thing. And it took some time for people to really understand it. But ultimately, the brand getting taken down, it wasn't a post that did it.
Yeah.
It was people calling dispensaries.
Yeah.
People say, I did something. It was all of us who did it. Because the brand wouldn't have gotten taken down if people didn't call those phone numbers. What we did is we built a Excel spreadsheet with every dispensary that they were in.
That carried them.
We put in so much work.
Okay.
And this is what I want people to understand. If you're going to do a boycott, get prepared. Do it right. Know who you are hurting and who you are not. And get prepared. Because one thing we didn't want to hurt was the employees of this brand. So when we had a list of demands, because boycotts come with a list of demands, one of our list of demands was take care of your employees. And another reason why we felt okay to do this was because the main owner was a very, very, very wealthy man with several businesses outside of cannabis. He's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Take care of your employees and do right by people. So we did a lot of research, like, should we do this? Should we do this? Is this a small business? Are we going to hurt? Nah. So that's what another reason why we felt, okay, like, this is going to be a good reason. Also, there was a list of demands for him to abide by, like, you know, yeah. to help out your community. You don't want to do that? Like, you know what I'm saying? So basically, when the boycott started, it was a little bit confusion, but people got behind it. They did action. They created this change. And then the owner ended up going in the comments and fighting with people.
Oh my God.
And that's what turned it into the LA Times story. It wasn't just the boycott. It was because he was fighting with people in the comments. He was sliding into DMs, telling people like whole lies. He was telling people that I was extorting.
Doing the most.
Oh, that's another thing. They went on the Launch and Go on a page. And they were saying this girl is extorting. We have a Latina owner. Her name is Latina. They kept
going. Oh, my God. They kept going with this fake person.
That's why Leticia. It became an LA Times story. Because they kept trying to lie and say that they always had a Latina founder. And that I was lying. Like, bro, I have receipts. Like, who do you think I am? Like, you know?
Well, what I want to do is I want to switch gears a little bit. Yes, because we have spent, 31 minutes speaking about this, these people and what they have done to harm our community.
Right.
And I want to talk about what you have done to help our community.
Since, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that situation, I think that it did a lot for Latinas, but it also put the question of, like, where are the Latino brands, right? Like, what's going on? Like, someone has to do it inauthentically for us to even, like, start the conversation. Yeah. Like, where are the authentic ones, right? So there have been a couple of cultivators that reached out to me since La Chingona to create the authentic La Chingona, but it just didn't fit right. There, I had a couple meetings that I was like, I don't know. And then I got into contact with Possible Project, which is the farm behind Humo. And when they first reached out to me, I thought it was for a collab with my bong company, Mota Glass. And we had a phone call and everything, a big conference call. And I'm thinking they're trying to ask me for a collab. And I'm thinking, this is awesome, you know? And they're telling me what they want to do. They were like, we want to build a, you know, Latino brand that's really focused on respecting the culture. I'm like, this is freaking awesome. This is what we've been waiting for. And they're Latinos, all Latino operation. The Farm Possible Project, they're all Latino. Owned and operated, they come from growing tomatoes out in, you know, Mexico. Come and bring that experience to growing cannabis, you know. They're from Sonora, you know, Hermosillo, Sonora. They're homies. And like, I was so just excited to learn about what their experience and what they were bringing into the community, you know. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. Of course we want to do a collab. And then we hung up the phone, and then it turns out that Jesus, the CEO of Possible, was like, damn, like, she'd be perfect to lead the brand. Like, that's what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, like, damn, I'd be perfect to work with them.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't want to overstep because I thought that they were coming to me for Mota Glass. Like, I don't want to be like, hey, jump in. So I was like, no. And then they didn't want to offer me this opportunity because they didn't want to make me feel bad because of Mota Glass. So you don't want to take away from your baby.
Yeah.
It had to be their HR person to kind of be like, come on, let's do it. And leave it to a Latina. Shout out to Manita from Possible Project. But she was kind of the one to be like, hey, there's a role here. And I was like, hey, like, I have an agency. So I don't take, like, I don't have jobs, but I have partnerships. Like, I have my team. I have, like, an agency. Like, let's work something out. We get on a call. Jesus is like, look, I want you to do what you did for Mota Glass for Humo.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to do everything. He's like, I know about La Chingona. He's like, I, like, dope what you did. Like, he's like, just do your magic. But he's like, I know you're not going to be able to do it unless it's yours. He's like, so let's fucking do it. Like, let's do it.
That's beautiful, man.
And at that point, I was like, oh my gosh. And they've been very empowering. Everything that I've, all my ideas, my tagline. That's my tagline. This is mine. I wrote this. Like, everything, all the strain names, all stuff that I came up with, all the descriptions are all me. But I know that they align with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that they believe in the same things that I do.
Yeah.
And that's why the freedom I have to really give my all to this brand, like, they've given me that by making me a partner.
Yeah.
Because I don't have any kind of, like, second guessing. I don't know. I don't have, like, a second guessing of, like, who I'm partnered with. Like, I know them.
Yeah.
Like,
and you know you can stand on that, especially
in
our community, because you want to be able to walk in your integrity, because in a community like ours, they will, you can see through fake shit real easy. So, and it, like, I mean, both of us knew that automatically. Working with this brand is not smart. Like, even just off the top, both of us were like, no. But then, you know, going even deeper, you find out how fucked up it actually is.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, very fucked up. It was rotten, you know?
Yeah. And you were able to, I don't know, take that experience and now basically create the real Latching, or what Latching When I was supposed to be, and actually represent for our community. That's what is so inspiring about the story. You know, that it has there's nowhere near an ending, but it has this like way of wrapping up your experience and turning it into what is now UMO.
I mean, what at the end of the day, what La Chingona showed the community, because it was making money, mm-hmm. is that our community wanted to be represented.
Yeah.
And wasn't being represented. And that was a huge opportunity that UMO walked into. Authenticity.
Yeah.
Authentic, because that's what we care about. And obviously, really great flower. We do mixed light, which is really great because it's a in between indoor and outdoor. Mm-hmm. So outdoor, we know as being really like what most people smoke, right? Indoor, it's on the rap songs. People know about indoor. And basically what indoor is because of legalization and because cannabis was illegal for so long, many growers had to go indoor because they're like, we can't go outdoor. And what it kind of created was this ability to control every aspect of growing cannabis, like water, power, you can do it. And so it costs a lot of money to do, but you're able to get flower that you control in every aspect. So you're able to get a good THC level, like 36-38% THC, sometimes like into the 40s.
That's a lot.
Yeah. But what's the cost? Light and a lot of power.
Yeah.
And you talk about some illegal grows going on in LA. Where is that power coming from? Communities.
Yeah.
And so...
Somewhere along the line, someone's losing. And most likely it's someone from our community.
Yeah. And so that's the conundrum with indoor, is that it costs, it takes a lot. Outdoor, super great. NorCal Farms, great. Like... sunshine and everything, love that. But downside, you're susceptible to pests, animals coming through, bugs, sun goes away, and then there's your power, you know. And then it takes a long time to get just a good yield. It takes like months and months.
Yeah,
that's the downside of outdoor. But with outdoor, you get terpenes is the smell that you get from cannabis. It's what you touch, and that stickiness, that resin.
Okay,
that's the terps. What gives you the taste, that gassiness, that lemon taste, that's called limonene.
Okay.
That's one of the terpenes, right? You get a lot more of that when you use sun. Indoor, you get the THC content. You don't get that many terps, which some people, you don't really taste it. Sometimes you get that faded feeling where you're just high, but you're like, what did I even smoke? That's that indoor, because it's so fucking strong.
Yeah.
Mixed light, what it is the all the controlling aspects of indoor, but it's an open top. So we use the sun, so you get the terps. But when the sun isn't cutting it, you supplement it with the LED light. That's why it's called mixed light, because you supplement it. People are waking up to mixed light because they're seeing you can get the THC content. We have flower coming in at 36%, 34%.
That's a really
high. We just got a new batch in. Jesus texted me the other day. He tells me our limonada just tested at 38% THC.
Wow.
That's indoor right there. But we are growing mixed light. Way less sustainable. I'm talking about less water per pound of flower, 3 times more efficient than indoor grows. This is the future of cannabis right here, mixed light. So we are doing that, and it's Latino grown, baby.
And you're ahead of it. You're ahead of the game, right?
It is.
I want to talk about weed and mental health, because you were I don't know what video, girl, because I watched so many videos of you in order to prepare for this, but you were talking about how you're able to, like, your experience of working as a bud tender back in the day like now is helping you also to help people get what it is they're looking for, because when people come into the dispensary, they're not exactly sure what they're looking for. They just have something that they want to cure, or something that they want to make easier for them, like sleep or anxiety. So talk to me about that, your own experience with weed and mental health, but also how you use UMO to help the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so mental health is already stigmatized in our community. It's tough to talk about it. It's tough to get help.
And then add weed, and then nobody wants
to. Yeah, and on top of that, but the fact is that cannabis does help. a lot of people with anxiety. It does help people that are struggling with mental health. So with UMO, we're trying to really let people know, especially within our Latino community, that you have a brand that gets it. And we're going to represent you on the shelves, but we're also serving up affordable, accessible cannabis with everything that you need. Because at the end of the day, to a lot of people, it is medicine. So my time as a bud tender, I think that I worked at a trap shop back in the days when it was like you had jars. Yeah. You could pick out weed. Like, you can pick out your own eighths. Can you imagine, like, doing that now? No, it's all packaged now. But, like, back in the day, I remember, like, trap shop feel. A lot of people just smoking weed, getting high. But then every once in a while, we would get, like, a cancer patient or someone that just had surgery. Mm-hmm. And it would remind you, like, damn, people really rely on this, you know? So when I started building UMO, I wanted to make sure that the bud tenders had an easy time explaining to patients what they're going to experience with the flower that they're going to buy. So for instance, we have a strain called Limonada, which is, like I was telling you, we just tested at 38%. But I named it Limonada because it's reminiscent of Mexican Limonada. You know, the one with the chia seeds? That's like really sweet. When you open up the bag of Limonada, you smell the terps of that sweetness. And so when you're a bud tender talking to people about Limonada and this strain, you can say, hey, check out this strain, Limonada. And you're kind of explaining already that it's sativa. People are going to assume it's a sativa because it's lemony. It's daytime, and it absolutely is. You're explaining limonene is one of the top terpene profiles. Like, you're sharing the story of what Limonada is and why it was named Limonada. And the patient already understands, okay, this is going to be sweet. This is going to be lighthearted. This is going to be... And boom, you made your job easier as a bud tender. The patient understands what they're getting. And you have a better rapport. It's not that sales relationship that can feel like kind of salesy. Mm-hmm. You're telling a story. So all the strain names of UMO have a story to them. So I also have a strain that I named Pulque, which is, for those of you, of listeners that know what pulque is, it's like a traditional kombucha-like drink. It's like a fermented type drink, has a little bit of alcohol, but it's not a cocktail or anything. People drink it in Mexico for like a kick, basically. Known for its pungency and potency. They used to serve it during the Aztec period to priests, right? So they call it the Aztec drink of the gods. When I smoked that strain, I was like, that is
you're like, I feel
strong.
Like a god.
Yeah, well, I'm, well, damn, okay, I feel like a goddess. No, but initially, what I felt was that back of the throat feeling when you're like, I'm about to get high. Like, it was when you first take that hit and you're like, yep, it's coming. I felt that feeling. Also, it was like a jolt. Like, it really was a kick. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that reminds me of what pulque is known for. Mm-hmm. So I gave it a name that matches what you're going to feel and experience, but also as a bud tender gives you a chance to tell that story.
Yeah.
They call that the Aztec drink of the gods, yeah. Actually. So I've tested it in our 5 months of being launched, 4 months around there, and people have our strains memorized.
Okay.
They come here. I heard one time I was at a dispensary and I overheard someone, hey, I want the Aztec shit. And it's like, because they know the story. They know cajeta. They know fresas con crema. They know, now we just dropped another one, arroz con leche. So I'm really grateful that I can give culture. We have culture in our dispensaries now. And it's great to hear from Latinos that they feel represented. But it's also great to hear from non-Latinos being like, we love to support the industry not moving forward.
Yeah.
So I love buying UMO because it's affordably priced, high THC, great tasting. But also I feel like I'm contributing to something.
Yeah, because of the effort that UMO makes for fair wages and to employ Latinos and to give back to the community. Yeah. Talk to me about your experience as a kid. Cause that was supposed to be in the beginning, but in my podcast, we never go in order of anything.
Yeah, go with the order of
we just go with whatever the fuck happens. But, talk to me about growing up in Whittier.
Oh, man. Yeah. I feel like Whittier is, you know, very, very Latino area for sure.
Come closer. Oh, and by the way, guys, if you can hear what's going on outside, there's a whole fucking lowrider show happening.
Hell yeah.
At Mariachi Plaza, like I mentioned earlier, but I know they're going to be able to hear the background. So just, I hope you guys
party.
Just.
Yeah, well, it's Saturday, so hey.
It's cracking out there.
Yes, it is. But yeah, I mean, I feel like my life, my childhood was very, very typical for, you know, like first gen, like Mexicana. Like I, you know, went to the swap meets with my dad on the weekend. My dad's a pharmacist, so my dad actually went to USC, which is the pharmacy school, which is why I was born like at Memorial, like by in South LA, and then we moved to Whittier and stuff. But and then I ended up going to USC as well. So I'm glad that me and my dad have that connection. But yeah, pretty chill kind of upbringing. My dad and I were really close.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I honestly didn't have like a profession, but I always wanted to talk. I was very interested. And I just was a natural talker. I always was very, I loved the whole entertainment world.
Yeah.
But I knew that I was like, acting wasn't really, like, something mm-hmm. that I knew how to do. I'm very forgetful. I smoke a lot of weed. But I was like, I love that world. But, like, what is what I want to do, you know? I wasn't close to my mom. I didn't have a strong, like female figure in my life to make me feel like I could achieve whatever I wanted to do, which is something that I think led to confidence issues growing up. You know, definitely. not having a strong mother figure, not having someone, you know, like a close relationship to your mom. Like I didn't really know her. It's a big deal. Same here. So that led to self-esteem issues. So what I ended up doing is I studied journalism because I was always just like such an interesting metiche, like always like, oh, what's going on, like what's going on here. And so journalism allowed me to explore that, and it also
explore what?
Just people.
Oh, okay.
Explore in like talking with people, but in a professional way that has a point, that's mm-hmm. not just me talking. Like I love journalism because it helped me explore that within me, my curiosity.
Yeah.
But it also helped me have a point to it and also do something about it.
Structure it a little
bit.
So
yeah, so journalism was a huge aspect because it also turned like the story on me sometimes, because being a good journalist, you can't forget who you are. Mm-hmm. And that's sometimes
your perspective is really important.
Perspective is huge. And sometimes, you know, doing traditional news, like news cycle, they always tell you, you know, you're not a part of the story.
Yeah.
But then feature stories, like you are part of the story. And mm-hmm. the kind of journalism that I know I do still, even though I'm not a traditional journalist, I know that I am myself and I come through the lens of what I'm doing, you know. The work that I do with Umo, I do cross into journalism. For instance, that photo shoot that we did for Mother's Day, we did portraits of Latina Cana moms. Really special moment. Mm-hmm. It's something I always wanted to do, highlight. Yeah. Cana moms who are breaking the stigma, but also are badass responsible moms.
Yeah.
But taking care of their kids. Mm-hmm. And you can be both.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so I wanted to give
and
them their show.
And most often you're both.
Yes, like, you are.
That's the thing about weed, is that it's like this. There, it's old, this view of it being like a stoner in the corner. Like, definitely that exists, but for the most part, people are just trying to get through the fucking day.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like, so I wanted to give their moment. And so we got Encrypt, our creative director, like our main photographer for Umo. It was like a portrait session with Encrypt, sponsored by Umo kind of thing. So we gave them the moment. We had Fatty Girl Spreads. Shout out to her. She made charcuterie board. We just wanted a moment for the mamas, you know. But as they were doing their portrait session, I interviewed them mm-hmm. about their story. And then I made the posts for Mother's Day. We had our regular Mother's Day, and then we had Mexican Mother's Day. We made sure that we gave that Mother's Day for Latin American mothers, you know. We shouted out, you know, Guatemala's, you know, like, you know, El Salvador, all, because it was all the Latin Americans' mamas, you know, days. So we did that. And you know, I interviewed them. I did what I do, because I'm always going to be a storyteller and a journalist at heart. And even though I'm doing what I'm doing now, I think that that's who I always was and who I meant to be. It's storyteller through and through. So mm-hmm. I'm doing that through my brands, but I think that it's just who I am. You know, I think when you're authentically who you are, you're going to make money doing it.
That's why when I first saw you, like, I don't know if you were like, is this girl weird or something? Because I like ran up to you. I was like, girl, I need you on my podcast, because you were so like, I felt like I just watched a TED Talk.
Hey.
And I was like, okay, where's her TED Talk? She's next.
I'm gonna manifest it.
Girl, it's already your, I gave one.
There you go.
You're on. Cannabis? Like, dude,
let's do it.
Hell yeah.
Who I need an email?
You actually have to apply. You do have to apply, but there's like TEDx. So like I did mine for TEDx Cal State LA, which is where I went.
Uh-huh.
And you can submit, you basically submit an idea.
There you go.
It's like a little, But I got rejected the first time, but the second time I did it.
There you go.
The second time they came to me and I got to do the opening one. But either way, the what you bring is like definitely you are shining, you know? And so that's a bigger purpose. When you see someone who is not only passionate about what they do, but, they're supposed to be doing that. I feel
like I'm supposed to be doing this. And it's weird because I wasn't lost like that, but I was a little lost, like, in my, obviously, my 20s, you know, trying to build my career. You know, I got my degrees, and now what? But I didn't feel like I was living my truth. And it's because I was living a dual life, you know? Professional, like, you know, all that, but then smoking all the time, mm-hmm. and like living in that, but not being part of any kind of cannabis community, yeah. not feeling like I have peers that like I smoke with that are on the professional level that I was, you know, yeah. but now that I live my truth, I get to hang out with other badass Latinas who are killing it in their careers and are doing the best, but also smoke a ton too.
Yeah.
So when you live your truth, you attract people who are also on your level, you know what Definitely. I'm saying? And so now I'm grateful that like I'm able to trust myself, have the confidence to live my truth and be like, yes, I smoke a lot, and yeah. like, let's be honest, like, yeah, it's fine,
we're probably gonna smoke after this, because she yes, did bring are. Us she did bring us some goodies.
Yes, you guys are stocked on the
thank
Umo
you so
Ace.
Much
and I gave you guys a Gelatina, which is an awesome indica strain. I want to say the nugs on that one are, I want to say, the prettiest. I mean, they're all pretty, but I especially like the Gelatina nugs. I named it Gelatina because it's crossed with a grape strain. So it reminded me a lot of, you know, Uva Gelatina, that purple one that's like upside down. It reminded me a lot, like the taste. It's very sweet. Arroz con leche, it has that kind of spiciness to it. And then I believe that one is a Fresas con Crema, which is a cross with a slurry cane strain. Which
I love that it says sweetness. Raza own.
Yes, so that's something that that was my touch as well. I know that our community has a hard time with Latino, Latinx, Latine. And I was like, I'm not even going to go there.
Exactly.
Raza, I feel like, is a unifying word, mm-hmm. but it also is a nod to the fact that we support local farm workers in the Salinas area.
Yeah.
And so it's an homage to Cesar Chavez and his support of the farm workers, you know, Viva la Raza, Pa la Raza. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to make sure that we are getting that across in our story. And as you can tell, like, it's journalist built, so their story is dripping in story. Umo, like, look at our online, look at our online website, look at our Instagram. Everything is very well thought out, very, very, like, I go hard, you know?
Yeah, it's very real. And that's what we appreciate about... Is this Mota Glass?
That is Mota Glass.
Thank you. She brought me a bong.
So Mota Glass came before Umo. And after La Chingona, I think people were looking for something to support, but I don't have no merch. Like, I'm not selling nothing. And at that time, you know, my partner and I were working in glass and found out some sketchy stuff about the glass industry. Mm. And that was another situation where both of our integrity was tested. He is a military veteran, so he is the kind of person that always does the right thing, a freaking hero, like, his integrity is on point. I feel like mine too, but like, this situation, both of us were like, fuck. What we learned in the glass industry specifically were that many glass blowers were Latino, and a lot of them were undocumented, and companies were taking advantage of them,
as usual,
exploiting their work, straight up taking their art and then mass producing it, parading it in front of them because they know they're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
When we found out about that, we were faced with a decision: continue to do what we're doing because we were helping this fucking company, like, nah, or like, do something on our own.
Yeah.
You know? So we decided, first we told the company, like, we can't, like, support you guys if you guys are exploiting your employees. Like, we can't do that. Like, you guys got to do right by your people, or we're going to dip out. And they told us to our face, nah, we're good. Like,
they're like, then dip then.
And so, we were like, we're going to dip and peace out. And I was like, you don't get access to me and my marketing for when I know that this is happening. So we walked away and we chilled for like a good couple weeks. And we were like very upset because we were kept talking to glass blowers and they were like, this is going to continue happening. And we were like, what if we could create a brand that actually gives stable work opportunities for all these glass blowers and actually cares about their community and actually creates badass shit that isn't just trying to take advantage, but actually trying to give people awesome quality glassware.
Yeah.
So that's how Mota Glass was born. It was Beautiful. Born out of need. Literally everything I do is born out of need and a desire to represent and desire to uplift, empower empower, when I unpack the word empower, financial empowerment, straight up.
For sure.
So right here, we're able to give a lot of glassblowers sustainable work. When they get an order from Mota, they know that we're not going to be like, oh, China, oh, can you do less? Or we're going to pay you less. They would do that all the time. They wouldn't even ask him. They would be like, this is how much we're giving you. We don't do that shit. So glassblowers, they love to work with us because they know that we're going to respect their work. And the overall vision for Mota Glass is to be basically a destination for locally blown glass. Mm-hmm. So we're grateful that companies are starting to come to us.
Also, you're going to become the wholesaler.
We are starting to do wholesale.
That's amazing.
So you go into those dispensaries and ask for Umo, and you go into those smoke shops and you ask for Mota, because they will place the orders because they always listen to the consumers.
Yeah. I was listening to you on shout out Marihuanera podcast. Shout out Mala. I was listening to you on there, and you were saying that it only took one person another time to ask at a dispensary.
I was on a podcast with George Perez. Shout out to El Cholo from the OC. So I was on his podcast. And we're talking about Umo. It was one of the first podcasts, too, that I did. And one of his listeners, I said, go to the dispensaries, ask for Umo. One of the listeners bought a Mota glass. And then he goes to LA Cannabis. And he says, I want Umo. They carried us within the next couple weeks.
Like you were saying, we don't know as the consumer how much power we actually have.
The buyers, they want to buy what you're going to buy.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're lost. I have meetings with buyers all the time, and they're just like, fuck. Like,
what are they going
to
like?
They asked the bud tenders to smoke it, and they're like, can you guys, is it good? Should I carry it? If you go in there, you ask for Umo, they're going to get it. Yeah. They know where to call us. You know, they know how to get to us.
Yeah.
So same thing with Mota Glass, you know, it is growing. We are kind of becoming a more of a destination for people who want to support local glass, but also to create their own brands of local glass. Mm-hmm. So we have some partnerships in the works right now. Stay watching the Mota Glass Instagram page, Mota_glass, because we're going to have some announcements coming up we're doing glass for a major brand that you guys are a fan of. I already know, but I can't say. So be sure to follow us, because we're going to be doing their bongs.
Yeah.
And so at the end of the day, we're creating more work for these glassblowers.
Definitely
more work for them, and then they don't have to work for these other companies that are just not doing right by them.
Yeah.
So we want to grow this brand so that we can do even more.
And you're doing
save the glassblowers, basically,
for real.
Giving you here is our mini beaker with built-in downstem. It's one of my favorite pieces, because it's my travel friendly piece. I'll just take this with me when I go on hikes or when I go to the beach. It's perfect for the beach, actually.
Really?
Yeah,
I go to the beach a lot.
What I love about it, it's so easy to clean. Mm. I use 99% alcohol and Epsom salt, and I'm telling you, this is life-changing. I used to use 70% and rock salt, and it was all right, but I'm telling you, the Epsom salt, it doesn't dissolve as fast as salt does. So it keeps its like rock shape, and then the 99%, it just melts the resin. You do that with a tiny bit, you don't need much, that stays clean.
Wow. Okay.
I love it. So I want to make sure to give you that one.
Thank you so much for all of your gifts, and thank you for sharing all your gifts literally and figuratively with us, because you know, you brought a lot of information and you're very knowledgeable about what you do. It's like, it seems to me that it would be ridiculous that in any room you would be made to feel like you don't belong there. You know, but
they do that. These men like will have a way of making me feel. I still deal with that.
Yeah,
because I'm very loud about my brands all the time. So when I go to these dispensary meetings where I'm pinching Umo, I'm dressed in my merch, you know, and there are times where they'll like assume I'm the brand ambassador.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're the girl that they have, just like the cheerleader. And you know what? I don't get offended at that, because I'm like, I am a brand ambassador. I'm a brand ambassador as fuck.
For your brand.
Like, I'm the biggest brand ambassador. I'm part owner, too. So when they tell me that, like, oh, you're a brand ambassador or you're a bud tender, I'm like, I used to be. But, now I have a brand. Like, oh, you're hired by them. I'm like, I'm an owner. And, like, I just do it very lightly. I don't get mad about it. But when I let them know, like, they're happily surprised, you know? And at the end of the day, people are coming out and they're supporting Umo. I'm happy to report that we are growing. We are growing. We're in a lot of dispensaries all throughout California, from San Diego to the Bay. I'm going to be in the Bay on Monday, just talking about the brand. But I think people are coming out to support the brand because it's something that is supportable. Like, we're authentic.
You feel good supporting something. It's easy to spend your money there, you know.
But also, high THC, tastes great, affordable.
Yeah.
Because with us, we're not white label. There are a lot of white label brands, and shout out to them. They're really great. But when you white label, there is another step because you have to buy from a farm. And then, mm-hmm. you know, it's tough out here. With us, we are the farm. Possible project. Yeah. We're their in-house brand. So because of that, we're able to pass on those savings to the consumer. Umo is affordable and it's high testing. Get
like,
you
how much
34.
Is one of these, Anique?
That one, it depends on your shop. So go to your local shop. You know, we are available in a lot of shops right now. Be sure to check on Umo. If you go to get.umo on Instagram and you look at our highlights, we have a highlight that says find us. That's where you can find all our shops. Boom, boom, boom. I have them all tagged, but also you can go on our website, getumo.com, and we have a store locator. You just put in your
perfect
zip code, and then
perfect
it sends you to
so
the
that's
first
where,
shop.
So if you are listening and you want Mota Glass and you want Umo, just stay updated with everything Susie's doing, because her trajectory is just only up from here.
Hell yeah, I haven't even talked about Latinas and cannabis yet. Damn,
girl,
you just
know.
Gotta follow me, because I have a lot.
You are definitely a part two guest.
Yeah.
like you said to that other podcast.
Yeah.
That they wanted to do a part two, you know, because you have a lot to say and you're very knowledgeable. And before we end, what I want to end on is just saying thank you for the gifts and thank you for your gifts again. Thank
Boom.
You so, so much for being here. Thanks for coming out, and I appreciate it. And I can't wait to just see everything you do, because like I said, you're shining and it's beautiful to watch.
Oh, thank you so much. And be sure to follow, you know, Mota Glass, MOTA_glass. Follow Get Umo, get.umo. And I didn't get to talk about Latinas and cannabis. That'll be part two.
For sure.
But follow Latinas_cannabis. If you're a Latina wanting to come into the industry, follow this Instagram. This is an Instagram for us Latinas. Learn about jumping in the industry, or if you have a shop that you're already selling stuff, we'll tag you. This is an account that's for us, so come learn about cannabis and join us.
Please do. Okay, thank you for being on the Millennial Mija podcast.
Hello.
It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.